There's a quote recently about, I can't remember it exactly, but it was about if the kids aren't actively involved in the game, they're probably not learning the game. And I stand by that. And I don't get me wrong, I believe in the skills and I believe in technique. Particularly in field hockey, you need technique to be able to deliver the right pass. But ultimately, the game is king. And I speak about just working backwards from the game. So almost starting sessions with a game, rather than the game being a reward that players get at the end of it if they behave themselves and they shut up during the lesson.
This is the Phys Ed Cast. Hello, Phys Ed World. Nathan Horn from iphysed.com here, and welcome to another episode of the Phys Ed Cast. Every now and then, I come across a resource that is just amazing and knocks my socks off. My guest today, Jack Rolfe, the founder of The Coaching Lab, created this amazing resource called the Match Play Cards. In this episode, he'll explain a little bit about the development process and how to use the cards in both physical education and coaching settings. I'm not going to give too much away because I want you to listen to the episode and really understand how Jack created the cards and how best he thinks you can use them and how maybe you might think about using them in your setting. Jack is the founder of The Coaching Lab, and it is a learning and development business that is shaped on how coaches are supported with resources and information. Jack considers himself an explorer of the coaching world, racking up 60,000 miles seeking to learn from some of the greatest sporting environments out there, including Arsenal Football Club, Eddie Jones at England Rugby, and the Pretoria Institute of Sport. I really hope you'll enjoy my conversation with Jack Rolfe.
Jack, how's it going?
Nathan, how are you? All good, my end. Pretty busy with stuff, but good to chat.
Yeah, so for those people that don't know about you and the work that you're doing, can you give us a bit of a background about yourself?
Of course. I hate talking about myself, so I'll try not to keep this very long. Kind of living the dream, I suppose, at the moment. So founder of The Coaching Lab, which sits alongside my role within youth development within hockey, field hockey. I kind of tell myself, and probably true to myself, that a bit of a failed hockey player, which is why I'm so passionate about helping coaches and helping players grow. Now I do a little bit of work in other sports as well, so a little bit of work in football and young leader stuff within schools. But as I say, totally living the dream here in England and getting to travel a little bit as well.
Yeah, for sure. So you mentioned hockey, I guess, being one of your passions. Was that something that, as a young person, that was your dream to become a professional hockey player?
Absolutely not. When I was back at school, and I still look at it this day, I don't know why I chose hockey. There was a poster up in the corridor, and I said to my dad, you know, maybe I should go and give it a go. And like every kid in England, I played football up until a certain age, and I was not very good. But I saw this letter and I said, I'll just go and play a bit of hockey, and went to go and play a little bit and got a phone call and said, why don't you join the club? Progressed from the school club to the main club, and haven't looked back since, and had some England trials when I was a youngster, and my mates were better than me, but you know, had some cool places, played in Australia and travelled the world with hockey.
Nice. Yeah, it's interesting. I remember, like, I grew up playing Australian rules football, but I remember doing some field hockey in one of our PE lessons during high school, and sort of really enjoyed it and found it really interesting. I remember saying to my parents, I really want to play hockey. And they said, well, if you want to play hockey, then you have to give up football because it's always, you know, Saturday mornings is generally the morning for sports. So I wasn't willing to give up football, but it was something that always really interests me, and I found really, really like a really fun sport to play. So I guess, how did you go from being, you know, a young person that started down that path to now working with coaches?
I suppose it's a good question, and one I get asked a lot, and I often don't know how I end up where I am. Kind of have two principles in life. One would just be make the most of every opportunity. And the other one is if you don't ask, you don't get. And I always look at my coaching path, although relatively young still, I've just made the most of every opportunity. I look back and think my first coaching gig came about when I didn't get selected for the England under 18 squad. And my coach said, do you fancy coming to do some coaching? And did some coaching in the summer, and it was a good laugh. One thing led to another. Graduated university a few years later, and because I was still coaching at the same time, almost wanted to give something back to the sport, and back to the coaches that have given me a lot. So it was more about now how can I share some of my knowledges and some of my adventures with other coaches. And I'm sure it's something we'll touch on, but I believe coaches do all the hard work, but possibly some of the most lonely, neglected people within sport. And that's why I'm so passionate about helping them.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll definitely get into some of the amazing work that you're doing a little bit later. But you mentioned going to university. So what did you study and where?
So study sports coaching science at Canterbury Christchurch University. So right at the bottom of England, and we're actually closer to France than we are to London. So it's a small little city down there. And originally I was actually down to do physical education. And it wasn't until I rocked up within the first week and I don't know what it was, but I just decided to change, and it was probably the best decision I've ever made.
Yeah. So within that course, what sort of areas were you studying?
So first year was very general. It was almost a bit of a booster year. So we had to do a bit of physiology and biomechanics, which I'm grateful for that we did 1 year, because I definitely couldn't survive 3 years of that. Then we progressed and then had the course tailored to what we wanted, which was great. So we did a bit of sports psych. And that was applied sports psych, which was really cool. What else? We do a bit of coaching pedagogy, so the theory behind why we're doing what we're doing, skill acquisition, and then we also had a practical element to the course where we had to go out on placement into different sporting environments and effectively put our new knowledge into practice and to give it a go.
Yeah, sounds interesting. Now, I guess rewinding even further, like some of the work that you're talking about doing with coaches now, and you mentioned coaches being a really lonely profession. What was, I guess, your experience of the coaches that you had as a young person? Like, were you able to, like, now looking back, is a lot of the work that you're doing, would it have helped the coaches that you had as a young person?
I think it probably would have done, because I've spent a lot of my life at a grassroots club, and the coaches I had were parent helpers. And as much as they tried their best, they didn't know any different to necessarily what they'd been coached. And their intentions were 100% right. And they were always trying to do the right thing. But, you know, you don't notice it when you're 12, 13 years old, but you look back and think, you know, how did I put up with that? And would I have been actually a different player if I had different coaches at that age, at that really important age of entry-level sport and at grassroots level, where there's a lot of kids and potentially a lot of talent. But how do we support the coaches to support the player?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting piece, and it's something that one of the courses that I just took for my master's degree that I'm doing right now is around long-term athlete development, and coaching definitely came up in that, and just that disconnect between the parent volunteer coach and the support that they get, and that often that is one of the barriers that ends up having kids drop out of sport, because they have a negative experience, because the parent coach, while their intentions may be great, because they've stepped up and said, hey, yeah, I'll take this on board, but they just don't have the skills or the knowledge to be able to actually support kids in the way that maybe they should.
And I don't think it's about necessarily changing the coach. It's more about just supporting that coach to do things slightly different. And if they've played the game, it means they probably have a good knowledge of the game. But how do you translate that knowledge into delivery ultimately? So the coaching workforce is there 100%. It's just about how do we grow that and support them.
Yeah. So I know a lot of the work that you're doing, you mentioned through the coaching lab, is trying to help support coaches through that thing. So can you give us a little bit of background about how the coaching lab got started and what the coaching lab does and go from there?
So it started when I graduated university, and it was almost a selfish, I look back as a selfish way of me growing my contacts in a way that I was very grateful for university. We had a CPD budget. I went to fantastic sporting environments at Leicester City, the Australian Institute of Sport in Perth, and I had some really good experiences. But when I left university, I didn't want that to stop, and that was really, really important to me that it didn't stop. And obviously, I did some great academic work, but it was more about how now do I deliver that academic work in an accessible way. So the coaching lab was formed around just explore, experiment, and share, just about getting people together and networking. And I've never been one that spent a fortune on coaching courses and whatever. So it's more about, can we create a resource and a platform that is accessible and just doesn't cost the coach $1 million to get involved? Actually, it's there, it's frequent, and it's different to the NGB courses. Because one thing I truly believe, if we all do the same courses, we're all going to potentially produce the same type of player, and that'd be really boring. And one of the foundations of the coaching lab is, don't be boring, be exciting. We want coaches, we want players to have personality.
Yeah, for sure. I completely agree with you in that sense. So I know that you have your cards right now, and I want to talk about them, but looking through your website and stuff, I know you also run breakfast workshops and conferences and stuff like that. So can you share a little bit about, like, did that come before the cards? The cards came first? You know, how did that come about?
So I suppose that those kind of concepts and services in a way probably came before and have grown alongside the cards. I absolutely love coffee, Nathan.
Yeah, me too.
I think every coach does. I believe coffee clubs and not coffee clubs, but coffee shops are really awesome places if you take 2 minutes to sit back and work out what's actually going on in them. You know, little things like you're going to Starbucks and they say your name. That's really cool. I go to a little coffee shop and the person knows my order straight away. And I see a connection between coaching and coffee. And of course, I'm biased because I love coffee. But coffee's a really, there's not a brick wall up against it. Everyone knows it. So if you can connect coaches through coffee away from the sports field, actually, it's probably not as scary about having those as those conversations would be on the side. So that's one way the coaching coffee clubs have come about. We did a youth development conference in October last year in 2019. That was really good, just about bringing people together and creating conversation. And putting world-class coaches in front of other world-class coaches in terms of grassroots coaches, because they are world-class in their own right. And that was a really good day of sharing. And now going into a lot of schools and clubs and just to support the coaches.
That's great. And obviously, like, your cards are, I guess, the highlight of the work you do. For me, especially, like, I remember stumbling across them. I'm not sure exactly how I first came across them, but I saw them and I thought, wow, they look amazing. And now they're one of my most, you know, used resources. And when I go and share at conferences and with teachers and I get the cards out, it is just, people are like, oh, wow, where did you get those cards? So if you haven't seen them, you have a couple of different decks right now, but the match play cards and then the reflection cards. Where did the idea behind this come from, and you know, what are these cards?
So the idea was kind of in my final year of university, which was a good foundation for me. So it's about, ran a dissertation back in 2018 now, about how do coaches integrate psychology into practice. And psychology is a really interesting subject, but also a neglected subject, possibly because it's so hard to get the research. And I went to some football academies here in England, and some really good coaches shared their thoughts about how they're doing it and what their experiences of gaining that knowledge has been about. Also went to some field hockey clubs to see what they do, both team sports and almost identical sports. It was a good correlation as to see the difference. That study then came out with four guiding principles. So one is ever-changing environment with randomness. The other one was transfer responsibility. so the responsibility is not always with the coach. We train above the game, so intensity of the game, decisions of the game is above what the actual game you'd play. And the last one was be reflective. So have all that knowledge and that great theory, and no one really wants to read 8,000 words of my dyslexic writing. So it's about how do I present that research accessibly, good value, but also quite playful and quite discreet to the learner and to the players and to the coach, not to scare them. So that's how match play cards all came about. And then the series has grown from 1 to 2 and will continue to grow in the coming months and years.
Yeah. So, I mean, for those people that haven't seen these match play cards, I have a deck sitting in front of me right now, and they're fantastic. They're made of this amazing plastic material, which I know is very intentional on your behalf. And they have these small images and then just a few words on it that allow you as a coach or a teacher to be able to change part of a game. So can you give us an example for the listeners, like of just a couple of cards maybe and how maybe they could be used?
Yeah, here we go. I've got some in front of me. So I've got Space Invaders. We've got a spaceship on the front, and then we've got Have a Positive Overload in the attacking scoring zone when you score to gain double points. So the coaches would probably be quite curious around what a player's doing off the ball to encourage a certain action. So that'd be one challenge we've got. We've got fast forwards here, so no two consecutive passes can be backwards. Try to play forward first and fast. So there's some of the team cards. And then some of the white cards we've got is a bit more individual. We've got loudspeaker, so the only player allowed to speak on your team. How will you organise everyone? So just about, you know, how can we give a coach and give a player the card to create opportunities for that player to learn and to feel part of the session, ultimately. And one thing I'm really interested in is how do we develop the individual within the team, and the cards have started to do that because coaches have been able to challenge players but also challenge the team environment. What cards have you got in front of you, Nath? What's some of your favourite?
Yeah, so I had the captain's call one. So being able to take a timeout whenever the captain wants. I know I've used the one before that is really great about the being able to move players. I can't find it in my deck right now, but being able to move players around the field, like being able to stop play and being able to reposition players. Yeah. My kids absolutely love that one. And just to have the power to be able to say like, hey, everybody stop and I'm going to do this. And, you know, it always starts with the other kids saying, well, that's not fair. You can't do that. I think one of the great things about these cards is that you're right. Like you talked about teaching above the game. And I know that they're probably directed mostly at the coaches, but I think they fit really well within a physical education context as well, because the pedagogy behind them, the way that they can be used, and just, I guess, even the flexibility of the way that they can be used, I think really fits well with physical educators and coaches who are trying to take a more player-centric or student-centric approach to being able to teach games, because I don't know, probably for you, you may agree, but I know when I was growing up, physical education, coaching sessions, it was very much stand in the line, do this drill, and then play a game. And the disconnect between those different approaches, just it doesn't fit because, you know, when in a game are you going to be standing in a line behind three people performing a skill for a few seconds and then going and standing in a line again. So allowing students.
There's a quote recently about, I can't remember it exactly, but it was about if the kids aren't actively involved in the game, they're probably not learning the game. And I stand by that. And I, don't get me wrong, I believe in the skills and I believe in technique, particularly in field hockey, you need technique to be able to deliver the right pass. But ultimately the game is king. And I speak about just working backwards from the game. So almost starting sessions with a game rather than the game being a reward that players get at the end of it if they behave themselves and they shut up during the lesson. Just can we play the game is how many times the players and the students ask that. Can we just play the game, sir, or miss? Because the game, everyone loves the game.
Yeah, and it fits. It's with that teaching games for understanding approach, or that game centered approach to learning. The game sits at the center of everything. And I mean, I've always had the belief, and I've been lucky to sort of growing up in Australia, where there's a very big focus on that sort of approach towards teaching and coaching. But that idea of developing like a thinking player, a player who's able to work their way through problems. For me, that's always been more important than, are you the most skilled player? Because I think it's much easier to teach skills than to teach decision-making. So if you have that skill of decision-making and knowing how to solve a problem and to work your way through something, then, you know, we can fix the skill things later on. So
because they're skills that we develop in sport that will set us up for life. So those decision making, the communication, the self organizing, the being adaptive is, you know, skills to pay the bills, because that's stuff you're gonna need forever. And that's why ultimately the game is king, because it's so, so important.
Our conversation with Jack will continue in just a moment, but speaking of games, I wanted to share with you a resource which you may not be familiar with. That is the Purposeful Games Database. The Purposeful Games Database is a growing collection of games available on the ifized.com website for use by teachers and coaches all around the world. This Purposeful Game Database currently has around 60 games in it and is growing by 5 games every month. It's a collection of fun, challenging games which get your students thinking, designed using the Teaching Games for Understanding approach and using levels of tactical complexity. These games are certain to engage your students. Each game contains a number of question prompts, as well as modifications, assessment criteria, and how-to play videos. They're perfect for teachers. They come in a one-page PDF format, and they're also great to leave behind if you have a sub-teacher. So far, there's about 100 people signed up for the database, and the feedback has been fantastic. If you're interested in learning more about the Purposeful Games database, you can go to ifized.com/games to find out more and register for the Purposeful Games database. But for now, let's get back to Jack.
I know, obviously, you've got the game cards there. How many cards are there in that game deck or match play deck?
55 cards. So divided into two sets, kind of in one. So you're team-based, and the white set is the individual. Intentionally haven't put team and individual on the back, because we want the coach to coach. And some of the cards, as you probably have found out, are totally transferable to the individual, but also the team. So yeah, 55 cards in the original set.
Yeah, and would you say that those cards are only able to be used in, I guess, team sports or like invasion games like hockey and basketball and football and those sort of games, or can they be used in individual sports and a variety of different contexts?
I think it's definitely a mix of both. There was a volleyball club recently that ordered some, and at first I thought, they were never ever designed for volleyball. And I got talking to the coach, and it was just about, well, actually, it's the same skills as the team. And the cards, because of their four principles, are very similar. So they're totally multi-sport and intentionally don't come with a set of rules. It'd be easy to say, do this, do that. But as I say, we want the coach to coach, and the cards to be created and molded to the environment and the players in front of us. The cards are by no means a cheat for the coach to stop coaching. If anything, it probably asks them to coach a bit more and a bit more creatively and a bit more individual.
Yeah, and I know that from looking online, I've seen, you know, on social media, different ways people are using them. And I know you're great at really sharing that out on your social media channels. I know some people obviously give random cards. Some people are really intentional about the cards. And I really like that approach. It sort of goes with what you were just saying. I think what it is maybe doing is, a lot of the time coaches and teachers will, you know, they're doing a certain sport or a unit in their PE program, and they have the same collection of games and activities that they often roll out, and they've been doing it forever, but maybe the purpose behind why they're doing it has been lost. And I find, for me using these cards, I'll go through them and pull a couple out that I think are really going to help focus the students to highlight certain aspects of the game. So for me, I found that's a really powerful way to use them, is to, you know, pull out two or three and then give those to the kids either during the game, before the game, or then even with the reflection cards after the game. So is there any interesting ways that you've seen them be used by different sports or different coaches?
Just picking up on that one, I suppose a lot of coaches just have them on their desk and not necessarily use them all the time in sessions, but it's more about just opening their brain, and we talk about unleashing creativity, but just opening their eyes to potentially what else they could do. As you say, might deliver the same game because that's all they know or feel comfortable with, but the cards both challenge the players and the coach to deliver something slightly different. Coaches recently have had some good fun of bringing them back into their philosophy and the tactics, so particularly in the team sports where they speak about a playing philosophy and a team tactic of selecting cards specific to the individual group and individual challenge. That might be their own team, but also, you know, talk about training above the game, but their opposition. So simulating and replicating their opposition with some of the cards and the challenges that might bring into training. So when they go and play the game on the weekend, actually the players have felt and seen what that opposition will play like, which is one way I really, really like. And some of the players love it as well. What else? We've got some ways of on the big coaching boards where we see a template of a soccer pitch or baseball or netball or whatever. Coaches almost blue tacking some of those cards specific to either the players individual with their name underneath or certain areas of the pitch. So certain areas of the pitch would have set challenges by the cards, which I think is really good because not every position is the same and we want players to be more adaptive in those positions.
Yeah, it's interesting. It makes me think back to one of the previous episodes that I recorded with Carl Condler from New Zealand, and just that whole gamification of learning aspect and being able to, you know, hook kids or players into learning through that gamification aspect. And I think the cards definitely do that. Moving on to,
how are you using them, Nathan? What's some of the ways?
Yeah, so I think like I'm still, I mean, last year when I got the cards, I was teaching early elementary. So I had kindergarten, grade one, grade two. And I think I found they were maybe a little bit too complex for those kids. So I didn't use them as much. This year I've got grade fives. And so I've definitely been using them with the grade fives. And like I said, just pulling out certain cards that I want to, I guess, exaggerate certain aspects of gameplay, or have certain students who are maybe struggling with a certain area, like being able to pull out a card and give them that focus and say like, okay, like your only role now is to play in the defensive half of the field. Like you're not allowed to go forward and attack. So it really focuses them on that. I've also just had the random deck there as well, where the kids can just come and pull a random card. And I found that sometimes that works. Sometimes they'll pull a card that doesn't really fit with the game as well as it might. So I think maybe being a bit more intentional about, you know, maybe creating a mini deck of those cards before the game. I guess that was a learning experience for me, was like not using that whole deck, but pulling out a smaller chunk.
I always keep an elastic band in mine in the bags that they come in, purely because then you can just put, you know, five or six cards together that you will use and the others probably won't be used. Just so then you know where they are, you've got them, or you just put them in your pocket. Just about pre-selecting those cards.
I did that approach. I ran a professional development here in British Columbia back in October for PE teachers. Was the British Columbian PE conference. And I just ran, it was a very simple sort of invasion game, bench ball, I guess you could call it, if you're familiar with that. Essentially get the ball to the other side. And I pulled out probably, I had like 10 cards. I think there was like 40 people playing in like a quarter of a gym. It was pretty crazy, but I just, every 2 minutes, basically, I would just throw a card or give a card to a player and stop the game, and that player would read the card out and the rules would change. And it was so interesting to see teachers go through this process, and the game just morphed and changed, and you could see those people that had worked out, I guess, how to break the rules or break the game based upon the rules. And that's something that I love with kids as well, is I know a kid really understands a game and is great at a game when they find those holes in the rules. And the other kids get really frustrated because that kid's cheating. But if you actually look at the way that maybe you've introduced the game, or you've introduced the rules, or the constraints that you've placed upon the game, if that kid's able to find that hole, to me that shows that they really understand the game and they're trying to take advantage of the game. So I find these cards really help those kids who like that aspect of things, as they might be seen by some teachers as being a bit of a naughty kid or a disturber. But for me, it really shows that they understand the game.
Massively, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so, I mean, you've got the match play cards, and you said you've now branched out into the reflection cards. So what's the difference between the match play cards and the reflection cards?
So if you ordered a set of the original match play cards probably within the last year, there was probably 6 yellow reflection cards in there. And they were just almost a bit of a teaser and an idea of just wrapping learning up together. And the study that I found about integrating psychology, and the final principle was be reflective and create the conversation to wrap learning together and bring learning to life, or bring the experience to life to almost support the next step for the game. So the reflection cards now were just 100% all about having responses to questions that aren't yes or no, because I know what it feels like when you ask a question and all you get back is yes or no, or you get a one-word answer, you get a buzzword. And it's not about testing the pupils, it's far from that, but it's more about just gaining their feedback and just seeing what they're learning and what they're experiencing. And as a coach and as a teacher and a practitioner, it's really hard to ask different questions. And it's maybe something you've experienced as well, is, you know, you go on courses and there's probably not much on the questioning or the reflection side of the game, but actually it's possibly the golden ticket to bring in the experiences to life and bringing the game to life and stepping from one stage to another. And I recently went to Arsenal Football Club, their academy, and every team and every session would have 2 minutes to 10 minutes worth of reflection. And to me, that was really important. Even the kids aged 8 or 10, upwards right up until the first team level, would just all have reflection. And Nathan, I think it can be sometimes a bit of a word where people turn their nose up to it and probably think, no, we don't need to reflect. But I think once you start to reflect, you see the gains. So the reflection match play cards were just about put all our favorite conversation starters, all our favorite questions into one big deck, where you can't reply yes or no. And then the questions are specific to the game and to the environment that we're working in.
Yeah, I think, as I mentioned before, that whole, you're right, like, I think reflection can tend to be a bit of a dirty word for coaches and teachers. And, you know, you'll often see, like, teachers will run this amazing lesson and this amazing game, and the students are engaged, and then it's like, okay, well, time's up, let's go, see you later, on to your next class. Yep. But for me, it's that why piece, the questioning, really, I think it's an assessment tool. It enables you to understand where students are at in their learning and their understanding of a game. But also the why of, like, well, why is this game important? Why are we even doing this outside of just, you know, turning up and trying to get our hearts pumping. But I find that the cards work really, really well because it gamifies that aspect. So just as the other match play cards gamify certain aspects of the gameplay, the game's now done and it's like the game is continuing because I get to have this card that's this physical thing in my hand, rather than the teacher or the coach just standing in front of the whiteboard and asking questions and kids thinking like, well, I just want to get out of here and get on to the next thing. So I think, almost for me, I find the reflection cards more valuable than the match play cards, because I think it's such a a valuable tool for teachers and coaches to use that really forces them to think about the why and think about trying to understand where their players or their students are at.
And I think you get to see the students and the players slightly different, because although you're asking a question, the question's on a card. So it feels a little bit less dangerous for the player or the student to give the answer. So because it's on the card, actually, I think you get a more truthful, more impactful response rather than me just ask the question personally. There's that element of giving the card to someone, which is really, really individual to that person. And the responses you get, I think when you see them and you bring them to life, you know, I absolutely love them, and I'm biased, of course, because I designed them. But to me, I think they are a bit of a game changer for player development and for coaches and staff.
Absolutely. And like, even just like I've used them before where I give every single kid a different card. And like you said, it makes it individual for them then. And then maybe those kids that don't feel as comfortable sharing their ideas in a public venue and you know, putting their hand up and sharing that idea, enables them to really think about their role within a game in a different way. It removes that barrier of fear for them. So yeah, they're absolutely amazing. Now, how many of the reflection cards are there in that deck?
We are at 50 for those ones. Yeah, okay. So it's 50 different cards, and ranging from stuff specific to the coach maybe, and some going towards the players. But as I say, I am biased, but they're one of my favorite decks at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got them in front of me right now, and like, you know, just different things like, you know, what was the coolest thing you saw a teammate do today? Or, you know, what's your body language saying to others? Like, just those little, I guess, prompts that get kids thinking outside of that idea of like, well, did you win and did you lose, and were you the best player or were you not the best player? And, you know, I think I know as a teacher, kids hear the word reflection and their brain immediately shuts down, because in every single class, whether it's PE class, whether it's math, whether it's, you know, science, they're asked to reflect, tell me your thoughts. But these, yeah. I feel like just direct them in a very specific way and in an interesting way that really help them to develop those critical thinking skills.
And I think the card journey homes have become a little bit more exciting for some of the players, for some of the parents that have bought them. They're not asking, did you win? Did you score? What's the final result? They're actually asking some really cool questions from the deck, which makes that card journey home for both the parents and that son or daughter a little bit more enjoyable.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they're amazing. I like can't recommend them highly enough. Are there any other decks in the works right now that you can drop a little bit of a surprise on people about what they can expect in the future?
Yeah, there's definitely some future decks, and time will tell about what they're about. And we talk about, you know, being learning led and people driven and coaching driven. And because I'm coaching and we're seeing what's going on around the world and seeing what the game is offering, that will start to inspire some more decks. But there's definitely a couple over the next few months that we'll see. And as I say, I believe the game is king. So everything the match play card series is about is about the game. So there are definitely a few more around the game.
That's super exciting. I can't wait to see what comes next, because as I said, like the two decks that you have right now are just, I think, incredible resources, absolutely game changing for coaches and teachers. So just huge congratulations to you on that, and the work you're doing is, I think, really, really valuable, not only for coaches but for teachers out there who are using those cards. Do you know how many countries right now the cards are roughly being used in?
I think we're about 25 different countries and countless different sports. And I've learned some new sports recently, all stuff that, you know, I didn't even expect them to be involved in, but they are, which is awesome. So yeah, about 25 different countries at the moment, which is unbelievable. And that's what the coaching lab was about, was just explore, experiment and share and bring people together. And to do that through coaching and to do that for a product is awesome.
Yeah, I love it. Now, for those people that want to get their hands on these cards, we've been talking about them for the last half an hour. What's the best way to go about getting them and you know, obviously they're all around the world, so it doesn't matter where you are, you can get a set of them.
Yeah, so wherever you are in the world, we'll find you and send them to you. That's not a problem at all. So the coachinglab.org would be the best place to head to. And it will calculate shipping and whatever as you go through, depending on your country. So you haven't got to worry about that. And then larger orders, we're happy to have a discussion around that with some schools that like we do. And some schools, particularly here in England, like Invoice. So we can do that for schools and for clubs if they require that. And ultimately, just more than happy to chat coaching with other coaches and other teachers across the globe.
Yeah, and you sort of touched on that a little bit earlier about that idea of coaches being quite a lonely profession. And yeah, I think building community around coaching, like you said, you've done with the coffee sessions and the conferences, I think is really, really important, because often, even as teachers or coaches, we get stuck in our little silos or in our gyms or in our fields. And being able to just have those conversations with other people open up those doors to different ways of doing things. So, yeah, amazing work that you're doing with the coaching lab and with the cards and with the coffee catch-ups and the conferences. I'm conscious of time because I like to keep these between about 30 and 40 minutes. So if you're okay, we'll move on to the three questions that I always ask guests at the end of,
here we go,
of the podcast. So yeah, this is the hot seat now. So just, you know, first thing that comes into your mind when you hear the question, just get it out there and we'll go from there. You okay with that?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So first one, this is one I always like to ask, and it's something that gives me some different interesting answers sometimes, things I don't expect, but something that people don't know about you, Jack.
Don't know about me. I have done a barista course, and I'm starting kind of my barista training in coffee. So I suppose that would be one thing people probably don't know.
So we could see a coaching lab coffee shop at some point in the future.
Potentially, yeah, with some sporting heroes on the picture walls. That would be the aim.
I love it. I love it. I'd be there in a heartbeat. Okay, so that's something people don't know about you. Another question I like to ask is around failure, because for me, I think failure is one of the best things that you can do. If you're failing, it shows that you're innovating. It shows that you're willing to try different things and you're learning from your mistakes. But can you give us an example of a time that you failed?
I suppose it's two, probably one sporting, one non-sporting. The one I alluded to earlier was probably not getting selected for the England squad when I was 18. That was a bit of a failure, but actually opened up other doors and changed my life, I suppose. And the other one would be, I am dyslexic, so there's probably a lot I failed at school, particularly the languages. I could just about do English, and I don't think I ever passed a French or Spanish exam, and science exams in there as well. So probably failed a little bit academically, but also as a hockey player as well. I leave the playing to my sister.
Yeah. And so how did you learn from those things? Like what did you learn from those failures?
I suppose you don't really learn, do you, at that exact moment? It's more in the future years you learn and you reflect back, and one, you should try a lot harder. I'll probably look back on, I still try and play now, but I should have tried a lot harder when I was a kid. But I never really knew what the end in mind was or what the potential was as a hockey player. So one, what did I learn, was just to give absolutely everything. And someone said to me, you know, in a few years afterwards, just make the most of every single opportunity you have.
Yeah, and I would argue that that failure of not making it onto that team, had you made that team and gone down that path, you may have had a very successful hockey career, but I would probably have a guess that you wouldn't be having the impact that you are now on the number of coaches that you're having now. So I guess the coaching and the physical education world thanks you for your failure as a professional hockey player. Because without that failure, maybe we wouldn't have these amazing cards to use on a daily basis. So thank you to whoever that selector was that decided that you weren't going to make that team.
Yeah.
All right. And last question before we wrap things up. I like this one as well, because I think if you had the opportunity to have the world's attention for 60 seconds, so everyone's has to listen to you, you're on TV, everyone in the world's watching, you've got 60 seconds, what are you going to say to people?
I would just value the individual within the team. I believe youth sport's about developing the individual. Of course, the team's really important, but ultimately look after the individual and look after the person behind that, and develop the person, and I think you develop the player, and to develop each individual within the team, and I think you have a pretty awesome team by the end of it.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Jack, thank you so much for spending a bit of your time speaking with us today on the Phys Ed Cast. I really appreciated the conversation. As I've mentioned a number of times, I'm a huge fan of the work you're doing with the coaching lab. And I really highly recommend all of our listeners take a look at the coaching lab. You mentioned the website. If people want to get in contact with you, what are your social channels, email? What's the best way for people to reach out to you?
Yeah, so my personal Twitter is JPR_25. And then the coaching lab is the coaching lab. And then on Facebook, Instagram, the lot, Facebook everywhere. And drop me an email if you want to chat, and that's info@thecoachinglab.org.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you so much again. I'm really hoping, I know I spoke with you a few months back. I know you're hoping to get out and maybe get over to North America at some point. I know that you would be very well received at conferences and schools and coaching clubs over here. So I really hope to see you in this part of the world at some point in the future. Are there any plans for travel and stuff like that coming up?
Yeah, heading to Australia later this year. So kind of early March time, heading to Australia, down to Perth, which will be wicked. And in all honesty, you know, can't wait for some sun. But also to see some different sports as well will be really good. Some AFL, netball's pretty big in Australia, so just to explore and see what else is going on.
Yeah, I know. Definitely, I feel like I grew up with an AFL background, and I feel like a lot of the concepts and stuff that the Cards offer, I think, will fit really well with those sports. And I know people in Australia will definitely eat up all of the work that you're doing. So thank you again for your time. This has been an episode of the Phys Ed Cast. My name is Nathan Horn from iphysed.com, and we'll speak with you again soon.